If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports game world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Christian. All right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, March 21st, 2014. It's the 77th episode. Good golly, I cannot believe it. 77 episodes of the Press Row Podcast. Hey, everybody. It's me, Rich Grisham. Thanks, as always, for listening. We got a really fun show for you tonight. Not that we don't always have fun, because I can't think of anything that's more fun than doing this show. But we have a really interesting approach tonight. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. But before we get into it, let's meet our panel. Moving from left to right on your radio. Up first, a man whose entire weekend would have been ruined by Flixster, but his vision was blocked by an endless stack of Seahawks Super Bowl merchandise from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedeye. Brian, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, that Flixster is... I don't even want to say the words associated with how bad that that is. And its ties to Ultraviolet and the whole cloud for movies. It's a mess. But yeah, it messed up my whole Veronica Mars viewing strategy, and I ended up having to pay for it, and now I have to go through Warner Brothers to refund me. So I was supposed to get it for free. You know, everybody who donated a certain amount in the Kickstarter was getting the digital copy for free, and it didn't work. And now I'm over that, and I will delete everything related to Flixster from my bookmarks and my computer now.
And that's the end of that story.
Yep,
I've never even heard of Flixster before I saw those tweets. So.
You're lucky.
Evidently. Up next, a woman who is neither undersized nor middling from U.S. Gamer and many other publications, our friend Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome to the show.
The Minnesota media is really pissed at me right now for my poor clock management ability and my general inability to close out games. Rich and I played last night in the Press Row PS4 Madden League, and he pulled out the last minute... the last second win, yes, literally, last as second. He kicked a field goal as time expired after I completely botched my clock management, and he was able to basically kneel out the clock and kick the game-winning field goal. I am ashamed, I have to say. The talk radio, they're having social media, talk radio, you name it, they're having a field day with me.
Yeah, it was definitely a rough post-game press conference, no doubt about that. But
Bill Barnwell is all over me. Oh my God! Thank you for not questioning. He dedicated the entire thing to me. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's like that Super Bowl win from year one is a distant memory. It's
you know, it's tough. What have you done for me lately? Right? I flamed out in the playoffs, and now I'm botching horrible clock management. It's a tough world out there.
It is tough for sure. Up next, a man who certainly knows that about 24 days and about 36 days are unacceptable answers for anything. The executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Shanner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
You know, Rich, what else is unacceptable right now is my bracket for March Madness. It is just complete shambles right now. Complete shambles. It's terrible. Well, or we can cut with this one on Friday. I am on track to win $1 billion, which I have not missed a single game thus far. I feel really good right now about where things are going. So either one's true. Either one's true at this point. The potential's out there. I could be a billionaire in a month, but let's face it. I did not go into the future. I did not work with Doc Brown, go into the future. Still a 2016 Sports Almanac in order to win this competition. So unfortunately, my bracket's in shambles. That's what's going to be the case on Friday.
Well done, sir. Well done. Up next, a man who has turned live tweeting NC State college basketball games into not just an art form, but frankly, a higher plane of cathartic existence. From Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rich. You know, I have to wonder if the payoff was $1 billion, and you know, what would it cost to like develop the flux capacitor and create a time machine and go into the future and get the sports almanac and come back and lay down a perfect bracket? Could you at least break even on the development of the flux capacitor? Because even if that was it, or you like, you know, you made $100 or a Bitcoin or something, the contribution to mankind would be kind of worth it. So I actually think that that Warren Buffett is like one of the lizard people from outer space who's in charge of the government and the international banking cartels, and this is just seed money to develop time travel.
It's hard to argue with that logic, for sure.
Oh, you can't. Yeah, no, really. Find the hole in that logic. Huh? Come at me, bro.
Up next, a man left solely in charge of the Polygon Empire while the rest of the team heads to GDC because Owen is in his house in North Carolina. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's me. It's me and no one else. I'm writing all the posts that are non-GDC. No, that's not true. Owen was working today alongside me. We had some good laughs about what was it we were talking about? The 88 Dodgers, is that right, Owen?
No.
We had good laughs.
This
about
conversation is over. Finished.
We had good laughs about my first major screw up 5 days into my career too, but we'll not talk about that right now.
Yes, we will not. Up next, a man who is going to try to win his NCAA college basketball bracket the old-fashioned way by not watching a single college basketball game all season long. From That Sports Gamer, Mr. TJ Lowerman. TJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah, I didn't want to break up the flow I had of not watching any college basketball games and start now, but I've been doing some research, Rich.
Oh, no.
Based on spring training this year for Major League Baseball, I believe two of the people on this call will need Tommy John surgery by the end of the podcast.
No doubt. That is statistically accurate. All right. So as I mentioned, we are going to have some fun this episode. Baseball is coming soon, the real sport, as well as MLB The Show. And we're going to talk a little bit, basically, and I hate to use the term, but it's kind of where we are. It's baseball outside the box. If any of us were designers of a baseball game or a mode inside a game, what would we do? We didn't put any real parameters around this. It doesn't have to be plausible. It's not like, oh, you have 5 resources and $2 million. But it also could be if you want it to be. Basically, we're not here to complain about baseball or MLB The Show or anything else. We're just here kind of to dream. And I figured no better time than now, as we're on the cusp of spring training, or we're in the middle of spring training. We're still a few weeks away from the release of baseball. And really, frankly, this was inspired by Chris Shanner. Chris wrote a very interesting piece on Operation Sports about kind of just this subject, some things that would be a whole lot of fun to do with baseball. So, Chris, before we get into it, thank you for inspiring us with your piece. Much appreciated.
That might be the first time and probably the last time this panel will ever talk about something that I did to inspire them. I'm just saying. Just saying. But no, thank you, Rich. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart because I am just a baseball aficionado, love the history of the game. I guess not aficionado, that's not the right word. Probably more like just I love the essence of where the game was, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And I love where the game is today even. But I love the history of the game. It's a very rich history. You can really get a feel for America just the movement of the country itself by where the game has gone and how things have developed and such. It's and just as far as sports go, baseball is really really ahead of all the other major sports in regards to once you got to the 50s, all these other leagues were really just starting to get some feet underneath them, while baseball just was just everywhere. And it was just took the country by storm. And there is just it's not even Major League Baseball. I mean, you're talking, you know, the AAA, you know, Pacific Coast League. You're talking the Negro Leagues. You're talking all sorts of just rich history that goes along with the game. And I mean, geez, Ken Burns' baseball documentary is just right up there with on the top of my watch list. So this was something that was just a natural kind of flow off of that.
And the piece specifically is called How the Show Can Embrace Baseball's History. It's on Operation Sports. Got a lot of, I mean, the piece itself is really good. Got a lot of good comments. Very, very well done. And we all love baseball. All six of us on the show tonight are big baseball fans. And it's another reason that I really thought that this would be a whole lot of fun to do this. So we're all going to sort of go around the table and pitch, pardon the pun, but there's really no other way to say it. But we're going to pitch our idea. Before we do that, Kat Bailey, you have something that you wanted to add.
I have a story to tell. It's a fun story. Okay, it's not a fun story, but whatever. So I was at AT&T Park last year, I think, and they were taking the wraps off MLB 13. And I wandered over to the bar, and I started talking to the guy at the bar, and as it turned out, it was the game director of MLB The Show. And we started talking about the game and what I thought about MLB 12 and what I would like to see. And I started waving my arms and getting on my high horse about how on earth does MLB The Show not have a damn historical mode, given that it's a sport that is obsessed with its history, with its great players, with its big moments. And he was like, well, are you telling me that you want, how would you implement it? Because would you want a mode where you're having an objective and you're telling them to hit a home run at the bottom of the ninth? And they can only, if they don't do that, they fail? And I'm like, yeah, that's a bit of a problem. And he was like, and are we going to put, like, freaking Joe DiMaggio on the cover of the game? Because let's be perfectly honest, our fans do not know who the heck that is. Because as much as we have our super duper baseball geeks, frankly, we're aiming for people who are gamers. They're usually younger, and they're not thinking about Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and everybody else. They're thinking about Andrew McCutchen and all of the current really good players. So those, I see, are the two major pitfalls to a MLB historical mode. And it came to me directly from the director's mouth, sadly.
Well, we're going to talk about all of those things, and we're also going to hear a lot of feedback about all of those things tonight. So let's start with the man who started this whole thing in the first place, Chris Sanner. Talk to us about if you had the opportunity to design a new mode or a way that you want to play a baseball game. Go for it, sir.
Well, honestly, just one mode is just really kind of hard for me to nail down because, or just something like that. Again, just, I mean, I'll take direct, I think that developer honestly had no idea what he was talking about. He's not a marketer and he doesn't have a clue. I think, honestly, there is a huge market out there for, I don't know, there's a market out there for baseball's history. I mean, if not, there would not be a game we have today. And honestly, I think the big thing is that I would like to see stadiums, a lot of these old stadiums. This was really kind of the crux of my article. Stadiums are really, they tell an interesting story. And I don't know about how well you can embrace this within the game, but I mean, to preserve these basically landmarks in a detail that's never been accomplished, you know, before. Bring back stadiums, bring them back to life. I mean, Ebbets Field, we've never seen it in the detail you could render it on the PlayStation 4. Tiger Stadium could be brought back to life. I mean, some of the cool things you could do with it, with that on a baseball simulation, are just interesting and exciting, really. I mean, but just to see that kind of, I guess to see that kind of detail brought back, these stadiums brought back to life with that kind of detail would be excellent. Another thing, I mean, I know I pitched this. I don't know how viable or feasible it is, but just allow different kind of league options out there and allow you to set leagues up in a way where you can shrink the size of baseball down or to, you know, have historical uniforms and that sort of thing. I'd be happy with just being able to make a 1950s style league with 16 teams and, you know, just fantasy draft the current guys into it. Imagine the talent you would have on each team if you did that. And that's really, you know, if you think about baseball and how good each team was back then, that's really where you're getting to. And it would be just be cool to see that. It'd be cool to see personally, just because I'm a statistical freak, I would love to see these players current day play in stadiums that are just ginormous, gigantic, you know, cavernous, really. You know, Ebbets Field was 468 feet, I think, to dead center. Good luck hitting a home run in dead center in Ebbets Field today. You know, that sort of thing. It would be interesting to see that. So I don't know. Just for me, just seeing more of the historical content included. Players is going to be a difficult challenge no matter how you slice it. I mean, NBA 2K did a good job with it, but I just think just including stadiums, just making that possible, and then trying to figure out a way to give us more options when we're setting up our franchises and stuff, just to experiment and play around with the stats and play around with the game, try to break it kind of thing.
Owen, good. Your thoughts?
I appreciate what Chris has to say about bringing obviously the history of baseball is what keeps people coming to the ballpark, and it's why families go to the ballpark, and it's why, you know, you always remember your first major league game and why that's a moment that parents want to share with their kids and that sort of thing. And that absolutely has, you know, a measurable financial impact, especially when you're talking about 30 teams playing 162 game seasons, you know, 81 in each city. I think I'm more inclined to listen to what the game director of the show said to Kat, which is they have a limited resource budget, and we're not just talking about time to make the game. We're talking about, I mean, you know, the licensing necessary to put Joe DiMaggio on the cover. I mean, this is a guy who sold Mr. Coffee, for f- sake. You know, I don't know if they've got Mr. Coffee money at Sony San Diego. And if they do, what else are they not paying for that we also would want in the game, and then would have a podcast saying, why the hell isn't this in MLB The Show? So, I think not to completely crap all over what Chris said. He does have some good points. I think the one that most resonated with me is placing modern day major leaguers in an historical context. I think if that is done properly in some way that has a little bit more of a context to it that isn't just a complete novelty, because when, you know, MVP baseball, I mean, and the show has had classic stadia for years. You know, you could go to the Polo Grounds, which were deeper to center field than Ebbets' famed 477 feet. And had the Eddie Grant Memorial in play. And you could do that, you know, with anybody, you know, from the modern major leagues. But it's like, again, you know, what would the modern major leagues look like if you still only had the 16 teams? What would the modern major leagues look like if they were playing in the old Pacific Coast League? Because let's not forget, that's a huge source of nostalgia there, even if it wasn't a full major league. And it killed a lot of people when that thing went away.
CA.888poker.com. It's a different kind of online poker room. Here you get to enjoy the very best in online poker gaming in an easy-to-use poker lobby. And especially for Canadians, you can practice and play your favorite games like Texas Hold'em, Omaha Stud, and others, and enjoy a 100% up to $400 welcome bonus. And if you get started today, you get $88 free and a ticket to a $10,000 winter free roll. So check it out, ca.888poker.com. Go there today and get rolling.
There are little things, little niches of history that can be mined for that, but they have to be done, I think, in a little more of an artistic context. And frankly, I think they have to be done in an almost personality-neutral context. I mean, you talk about the Negro Leagues, and that is for sure an important component of professional baseball history. but where are you going to get the licensing for Double Duty Radcliffe, you know, for Josh Gibson, for Turkey Stearns, for Buck Leonard, most famous baseball player of my home state. These kinds of things, some of them are Hall of Famers, but some of them don't necessarily have estates, and they, you know, need to be compensated for the use of their likeness. So I think instead of that, maybe you have an historical mode where you are a Negro Leagues baseball player who is playing alongside, let's say, Jackie Robinson or Larry Doby, guys who do have estates and can be licensed probably for reasonable amounts of money. And then you create a narrative mode that teaches people a little bit more about that period of the game. I think that is something that, Major League Baseball would definitely be willing to endorse. B, could be doable in a compact mode the same way we saw with Fight Night Champion 3 years ago, which had a cinematic career mode. And then also, this is a game that has licensing from the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. That is a museum, and they take their admission very seriously and definitely commit themselves to teaching about the game. And I'm sure you could bring them along into a development role that also would either enhance the story that you're trying to tell and then enhance the product alongside it, you know, with their participation.
TJ Lowerman.
I would love to see the old timey parks, specifically like Ebbets Field, because my grandfather grew up in New York and he would go there as a kid. So just to be able to, because all I've ever got to see, because I was born 24 years after it was torn down, all I've ever got to see of it was just old pictures that are usually not in color. And if they brought in some of these fields, I would love to take my PlayStation over to my grandfather's house and be like, is this what you remember? Do you remember sitting over here? And especially the stuff with the crazy dimensions, like Polo Ground specifically, if you're going to be able to do a franchise there, it would be cool because then you have to build your team around, well, if I have Denard Span and I just hit it into the gap, he's getting a triple, maybe a home run every time. So I think just the inclusion of old stadiums, because I think MLB The Show, for example, has had the same six stadiums for the last 5 years, and they've charged like various amounts of money every year. But yeah, I really wish they could bring some, just even just the stadiums. Give me a sepia tone if I'm going to play there too, just in case.
I'm not quite on board with the sepia tone, but definitely on board with the rest of this. Cap Bailey, your thoughts?
I'm going to go back and respond to one of my own criticisms, or not my own criticism, one of the director's criticisms, when he said that, how exactly do you structure this? And my first thought, and I think the way that you would have to approach this, and this is kind of responding to Owen's comment as well, is that you would have to approach it as, rather than throwing in like a historical narrative mode or that sort of thing, you pick like seven of the greatest games, right? You think, all right, what are the most important games in MLB history? And you start thinking about shot heard around the world, or the game seven of the Pirates versus the Yankees, or my homer pick, the 91 World Series game six or game seven, you know, like these amazing moments in MLB history. And then you don't try to recreate it. You just give the player a chance to play it, have authentic commentary, soak in the atmosphere, and then hopefully, while it would cost money to get the likenesses of these players, if you keep it on a small enough scale by getting individual teams and not all of the teams ever, you could keep it at a reasonable amount of money. For example, I believe, or not unlike what Madden does, where they will get a large number of individual players, historical individual players licensed for like Madden Ultimate Team and that sort of thing. So if you keep it on a small scale to start, it could be the beginning of something really great, I think.
All right, very good. So that is number one. Up next, Owen Good, how would you approach this concept?
Well, I would, Rich, I would try to do something that is truly groundbreaking with Major League Baseball, and that is I would try to create a Major League Baseball title on the Xbox One and Xbox 360 this year.
Now, come on. I told you, don't get crazy.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. That's completely beyond the realm of possibility. But I do have another idea, and you guys are going to roll your eyes. You would roll your eyes thinking about it. You would roll your eyes playing it. I would like to see Oculus Rift support in the hitting interface for baseball. And there's a reason for this. And if we're talking completely fanciful, because there's no way in hell this would ever happen. But I have a reason for desiring this sort of thing. You know, right now what we see with motion control, and this would be entirely with PlayStation Move, because correct me if I'm wrong, there was never even basic Kinect support in MLB 2K, correct?
I'm aware of.
Right. I mean, they wouldn't have had a mode to support it. Right. And with Move, it's basically, you know, home run derby, and you get up there and you swing the lollipop around, and that's kind of, you know, hilarious for a couple of times, and then that's it.
Right.
I think, how many people here on the podcast played baseball in high school? Anybody?
I did a little bit. It wasn't good enough to last for very long.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. I played while I was in high school, but not on like the school team.
Okay. All right. You know, when you're playing in high school, this is where you're kind of not screwing around. And I had many at-bats in high school where I was like the guy at the front of the boat in Saving Private Ryan, you know, whimpering and pissing on himself. I think, frankly, with Oculus Rift support, trying to hit against Major League speed.
Oh, man.
You know, you would actually understand just how incredible some of these feats actually are. And when you see to scale the distance, let's not talk about just, you know, the cartoon center field of, you know, 477-foot Ebbets Field. Let's just talk about a standard, you know, center field power alley of, you know, 390, 375 feet or something. That's still a hell of a long ways away. And when you're trying to hit against major league speed, you know, thrown at you 60 feet, 6 inches, and you can't hit it, and then you're completely taken off balance by an off-speed pitch on the next pitch, you know, you might actually develop some sympathy the next time the hitter on your favorite team doesn't take the bat off his shoulders in a critical moment, like, I don't know, Carlos Beltran. So,
man, what is happening tonight? This is terrible.
Obviously, that was an entirely too long of a setup to punk.
Far too long. Yes, far too long and far too painful, sir.
I think if we're going to discuss sort of fanciful ideas for a sports video game, it's also worth it to, you know, go into the realm of things that are impossibilities and discuss why. And I think it gets back to a common criticism that I have of motion control gaming and these sort of things. And it's not necessarily that they're gimmicky. It's that people play sports video games to have a realization of talent that is far beyond anything they have in real life. And, you know, as much as sports video games push into trying to replicate reality, I think the more they chip away at that fantasy, and we've all had, you know, and heard the problems of, well, this game is, you know, too complex, or the play calling in Madden is so deep, and, you know, adjusting my defense pre-snap, it's like I've got to be a professional defensive coordinator just to get it. That's on one end of the ledger. And then there's sort of the physical acts that are, you know, people are constantly trying to approximate with things like motion control. And that's why I brought up the Oculus Rift as an example. I think sports video games need to still be pushing in the direction of delivering that kind of fantasy that is, you know, I am never going to be able to do this in real life. And I know that, and that's fine, but there's enough of a suspension of disbelief while I have the controller in my hands that it, you know, it makes it a fulfilling experience. So the you know, the push for immersion and the push for reality is a good thing, but I don't think any of us are picking this up because we went out and took batting practice with the Detroit Tigers yesterday, you know, and really want to get that feeling, you know, back there. It's like, damn, you know, I swung just a little too far underneath, you know, that curveball that Dan Heron threw me or something like that. These are games that are still joyrides and still roller coasters. And, you know, it's like you can go to an amusement park, and we have one up here in Western North Carolina called Tweetsie Railroad, in which you jump on an old-timey train and ride a train that is like what it was in 1890 or whatever. And it was the most boring thing to me as a five-year-old. Or you can get on a roller coaster, and that was exciting. And I think sports are sports video games are the last place you want to be pushing for greater realism, at least at this point. We've got enough of it already in the visuals and the fidelity. We don't need it in the controls.
You know, I find it really interesting in a lot of ways, but I want to go around the table before we get back to me with my thoughts on this. So we'll start with you. Sumit, would you play, would you be interested in a Oculus Rift version of baseball game?
I mean, I play it. I'm interested in the thought, but... like, what is that? What form does that take? You know, this is a problem that I, or this is a concern that I have with a lot of, you know, current Oculus Rift experiences is that they're tech demos, right? They're prototypes. I mean, you're not going to have a full baseball game that's played from the Oculus Rift. I mean, as Owen even said, you know, it would just be the hitting, right? Like, you're not going to have pitching. I mean, I suppose you could, but I don't know what, like, how that would work unless you also had, like, a move controller in your right hand and you were pitching like they have the move pitching in the show. And then you have to get into the fielding, whatever else. I mean, like, you know, it would only be a thing that would be a, like a diversion. You wouldn't have a full game based around it. And it would, it's not something that I think would be sustainable for like a full experience. But it's certainly like, I'd love to just check that out just to sort of have that experience of, you know, as Owen was saying, you know, facing a Randy Johnson fastball or something. But yeah.
Brian Weida, your thoughts on a Kinect / a Oculus Rift version of baseball, something you think could work, something you think would perhaps be, I hate to use the term, but perhaps even a game changer.
Yeah, there would be two, I think, serious limitations to that. And that's talking about myself specifically here. One of them would be, you know, physical issues. Like, I have problems with vertigo. I can't use an Oculus Rift. I don't think I could. Regardless, something that I put on my head, I don't think that would be comfortable for me. And then you also look at previous Kinect games, previous Wii games, and how you know, the physical toll it takes on people, how they don't generally want a workout unless they're buying a specific workout game, but they don't last that long on their feet. They don't last that long swinging things around. And, you know, a lot of people don't have the space for it either. There's just a lot of limitations, I think, when you start to talk about, you know, getting up and being a part of it that don't, and it doesn't really appeal to me at all.
TJ Lowerman.
Yeah, in my favorite game of all time, the Japanese-only professional baseball Spirits, they actually have a setting for pitch speed, and the highest level is realistic. So the pitches are coming in supposedly at the same speed they would be coming in real life, and it's pretty ridiculous. And that's having to look from behind the catcher and standing up there. There's no doubt if I wore an Oculus Rift and was batting against a game, I would probably jump out of the way. It's not even a question.
But my point exactly.
I think it would be cool because I think they could make that more of like a training thing. I don't think they'd ever actually make it into like a real game, but I could see that being kind of like a training tool they would develop for people. Maybe people that get hit and they get scared of pitches coming in. Maybe something like that. I think we got something here, though. If the Oculus Rift was a little smaller.
Chris Sander, how long would it take for Operation Sports servers to melt down if if at GDC this week Sony announces support for their own version of Oculus Rift for MLB The Show?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. You see, at Operation Sports, we got a bunch of tough guys who would probably, they would just assume they're going to hit, you know, 72 home runs in a season doing that or something. You know, they'll probably just assume that they got it down. So, but no, I'm kidding. I think that the reaction would be pretty modest. I don't think it would be it would be one of those kind of roll of the eyes kind of features for most guys, even though I think personally it would be really cool. I have stood in the batter's box with a guy who has thrown a 90 mile per hour fastball. It is not fun. It's actually less than exciting. It's less than exciting, actually. It's not as fun as you would think. I also was a terrible hitter. I was a pitcher, so that's I was always usually on the other end of that, and I was just hitting as a novelty because we didn't have the DH role in Oklahoma in high school. So I would just say that it would be a fun experience to relearn why I am so bad in the batter's box. It would be a really fun experience.
Cat Bailey, your thoughts on a immersive Oculus Rift like baseball game?
It just brings me back to MLB 2K on the Wii and how excited I was to play that game. And then I realized that I actually had to hit a pitch. And I cannot hit a pitch, guys. I cannot hit a pitch at all. Because, you know, for me, sports simulations aren't about having a fantasy of having some athletic ability that I've never had and never will have. Because for me, a sports simulation is much more about the fantasy of having complete control over building my own team and bringing in these athletes. I've always been 100% removed from the game in my own mind. I don't necessarily care about playing the game. I care about watching other people play the game and watching their stories unfold. So in that sense, Oculus Rift Baseball would have no appeal to me, in much the same way that Road to the Show and Superstar Mode and everything else usually takes a back seat for me in comparison to like GM Connected.
You know, what's interesting to me is I think we're all sort of taking the leap to combine a immersive Oculus Rift or virtual reality system with the need to swing the bat or throw the ball. I mean, to me, if I'm sitting there holding my controller and yet instead of looking at a television, I'm in a 360-degree world and I can still press the button to swing and press the button to throw and do everything with the controller that I do today, I would love that, right? It's I don't think we have to say, well, you also got to throw and swing. To me, just being able to look around the stadium while I'm waiting to throw a pitch, you know, turn around and check out what's going on in the bullpen, or if I'm a hitter, maybe looking down the third base line and seeing the signs that my third base coach is sending to me, or if I'm running around the bases, taking a quick glance at the coach to see whether I should, well, not that major league ball players do it anymore, but when they used to actually look at their base coaches to see whether they should, you know, stay at the base or slide or whatever. Now they just do whatever they want to. I think, or even if you're playing out in the field, like sort of having that experience, but using a controller, I think would be fantastic. And I could be going way out on a ledge here, but the fact that at GDC, Sony is, I believe, there are certainly the rumors by this time this show comes out, we'll know whether it's true or not. They are going to be talking about their own developed, you know, platform for this. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that we could see something like this. Sumit, take us out on this one.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point you make, and I think some developers have experimented with doing this, not from a visual perspective, but from an audio perspective, which I think is you know, had some successes and some not as much successes. But for example, I really like the idea. I think it was introduced last year in MLB 13, where when you were playing Road to the Show, you know, the audio experience was completely different. You wouldn't hear the commentary. You'd only hear the chatter on the field. So for me, as a pitcher, you know, I'd sort of would hear my infielders behind me saying, you know, two down, or whatever.
Yep.
I thought that stuff was really neat. You know, this year they said that they're going to give people the option if they want to hear the full usual broadcast presentation. I think some people were turned off by that audio experience last year, but for certainly, like, I think that could be cool, you know, playing it with an Oculus Rift on and just with a controller. But one of the things that developers have tried is the audio part of the experience.
But no doubt, I could absolutely see myself taking an accidental header right into my treadmill or my desk when high heat comes in around 90 miles an hour right at my head. So no matter what, that could be a problem. Can you imagine the warnings that would appear at the start when you boot that game up?
CA.888poker.com. It's a different kind of online poker room. Here you get to enjoy the very best in online poker gaming in an easy-to-use poker lobby. And especially for Canadians, you can practice and play your favorite games like Texas Hold'em, Omaha Stud, and others, and enjoy a 100% up to $400 welcome bonus. And if you get started today, you get $88 free and a ticket to a $10,000 winter free roll. So check it out, ca.888poker.com. Go there today and get rolling.
All right, so TJ Lowerman, you're up next. How do you want to experience baseball in video games?
Well, which we've always talked about, the main problem with these baseball games is you have no sense of history. So I looked for another sports game where they bring out the most of the history that they have. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, but you know what I'm saying. WWE series over the past couple of years has had great single-player modes, culminating with Road to WrestleMania this year. The way those work, they break down into sections like 5 or 10 of the best matches from a decade or an era in the game. And I think that's something that MLB could really use. Like, imagine you're coming in, it's the 86 World Series.
Yes, I like this is going.
Rich Grisham, you are Calvin Schiraldi.
I like that a little less, but I'm still listening.
All you have to do is come in and get the inning out.
That's impossible. We all know it. Can't happen.
It is impossible. But the thing I really like about the way the WWE series does it, they have like a full video package going into that match. So you get all of the great backstory and everything for it. So stuff like Calvin Schiraldi's 86 World Series. You come in as Dennis Eckersley in the 88 World Series. I mean, that guy could barely walk. You could obviously strike him out real easily, right? You could be Ralph Branca in the pennant against the Giants.
Around the world, yep.
Yeah. I mean, as Kat was saying earlier, a lot of these kids that are playing these games don't really know that history. But I feel like they want to know the history. Because if you're a Yankees fan, you know you have 27 world titles.
Stop it. Stop it right now.
Well, the Mets have like what? One, two?
Two.
Two?
Yes.
That 69 one, come on. You had Nolan Ryan, so I mean, obviously. But imagine you could do stuff like, I mean, I'm going to use all pitching things because it's my favorite part to play in these games. But imagine you come in to 5 or 6 different spots over Oral Hershiser's record scoreless inning streak. Or you come up, you're 3 innings away from the record. And now you come in and you have to finish that out. You're Carlos Beltran and you actually get the bat off your shoulder.
Come on, what is... I hate all of you.
Hey, guess what? I'm the one that has to be Mark Wohlers pitching to Jim Larritz, and I have to get a show. So, but I mean, pretty much every team has at least one key point in their history that you could replay.
Except for the Seattle Mariners.
Griffey scored that time, remember?
Oh, yeah, there was that one game.
And there actually put some good moments in the history of the franchise, not in the last 12 years.
But. Yeah, in Little Big League when
you had the 116 game wins in a season.
If we could go back a couple of years, I as a Rangers fan, I wouldn't get to have any in moments. I mean, what would I have?
A-Rod, you can bat as A-Rod.
There you go.
What you mean? Don't trade for A-Rod as the Rangers?
Do you want to make this deal?
Yeah, that's cancel. That's the one option. You have to push okay or cancel, and that's it. That's all you got.
Yeah. All right, so let's take this idea and go around the table. Chris Sanner, if you could pick one game in history that you would want to play, as is, all the players, all the real players, the real stadium, the right situation, set up perfectly, what would that one game be that you would want to play?
Would changing the outcome in any way, Rich, change the outcome in real life? That's my next question.
Let's go with no. and see how this goes.
In that case, there's no game in history I'm willing to play, because the feeling of pain and anger and angst will still be there no matter what I do. But if I could, I would probably pick the as a Rangers fan, I would probably pick that first ALCS, that game six against the Yankees? I'm getting my ears mixed up. But that year that the Rangers won the AL and went to the World Series for the first time. I don't remember anything else after that year. But the Rangers won the AL that year, and I would pick that game for sure.
Oh, and good. What would your one game be?
There are many historic games that you could play that went either way. But if you're talking about something that truly is like an up for grabs consequential game that could turn the tide of a postseason series, I would go with game four of the 1993 World Series. Toronto 15, Philadelphia 14.
I watched that whole game front yes. to back.
And that is, and I think that's fertile field for all of this discussion, because I mean, you score 29 runs in a World Series game, that thing is wide open. And it's like, you know, could you can do anything with that game. You know, could you score more runs with that?
Right.
Could you actually manage a sensible game, or, you know, not use 37 pitchers, you know, in trying to complete? I mean, my goodness, that is a memorable game for all of the wrong reasons in Major League Baseball history. And yet it is utterly consequential, obviously, because the winner of that game is the Toronto Blue Jays. And they won the game, and they won the World Series in six games. So, you know, if you go back into that and that thing unfolds a little more conventionally, you know, what does that do to the flavor of the rest of the series? I think those are the kinds of games that you really want to get back into, you know, that seem, you know, game four is not an elimination game unless the team that wins game four won the three preceding it.
Right.
So it's sort of that, you know, the middle of the series. Okay, what's really going on here? Who's going to get the upper hand? And those are the middle games are the ones that people forget. But this one was absolutely, you know, determinant, because it, you know, it exhausted bullpens mm-hmm. in both cases.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beginning of the middle three game stretch in Philadelphia. You know, that's the kind of thing that I think has a ways to go, you know, with some creativity.
Yeah.
You know, for an historic mode that is challenging without being a novelty, and is a little bit more akin to what we saw. And I'll get off the mic here in a second. A little bit more akin to what we saw, for example, with the Tiger Woods historic modes, where you really are trying to recreate some crazy things, and you understand just how difficult and consequential they were in real life.
Brian Weedag, what would your one game be that you would want to play? Sort of an all-in, everything there, just as tense, just as important. You win it, and it's, you know, it's a big deal.
I'll tell you, there as a Seattle guy, who, you know, 1995 sticks with you, everything through that season and the end of the season and the playoffs. But you know, like if you wanted to recreate two games that would come to mind would be obviously the game five against the Yankees, and then the play-in game against the Angels, bringing in, you know, Randy Johnson out of the bullpen, and that could be awesome. But one game sticks in my craw even this, you know, after however many years it's been, what, 19 years or something. You know, it was actually game two of that Mariners Yankees series. It went 15 innings, and Tim Belcher gives up a 2-run home run. And that was just, it was crushing, because that made the series 2-0 Yankees. I want to be Tim Belcher. I want to shut down the Yankees and then go and win it in the next inning or whatever. I'll just never get that picture out of my mind of that home run and the crowd throwing like popcorn and beer into the air and stuff. I'll never forget that. So I'd like to fix that.
So let's transition to the loathsome Yankees fan submits our card. What game would you like to play?
Well, you know, I could – there are many different choices here. I could, as I mentioned in the chat here, go with Game 7 of the 2001 World Series and make sure that Mark Grace and Luis Gonzalez don't get on base in that ninth inning at all to close out that World Series, you know, after 9/11 to bring the trophy home.
That was an amazing World Series.
Home to New York.
Young really Kim, was. My goodness.
You know, after Mr. November and all that. That's one. Also, you know – Game 7 of 2004 ALCS and not have Kevin Brown or Javier Vasquez anywhere near the mound in that game, you know, that would be great. Yeah, I mean, and certainly, you know, there are obviously, as Owen was saying, also the mid-series moments. You know, one maybe some Braves fans want to try rewriting history with is, as TJ mentioned, Mark Wohlers and Jim Leyritz, Game 3, I think that was, 96. Down in Hotlanta at Fulton County Stadium. Yeah, and lots and lots of options. I think this is this is a mode that's ripe for use in games. Thing is, though, with something like this, you know, I don't know that you would want it to be the sort of one-off thing like Madden moments. You know, I almost think that you would want to, like Owen said, you know, do it. Have it start in the middle of a series, but then maybe you play out the rest of the series, see what happens, instead of just, oh, you know, here you are Mariano Rivera in the bottom of the ninth inning trying to close out the World Series. I mean, that's well and good, but, you know, you get three outs and you're done, right?
Right. Cap Bailey, what would your one game be?
Well, as a Twins fan, I feel practically obligated to say Game 7 of the 1991 World Series, arguably the greatest game in World Series history. But I will actually say Game 6 of the World Series of 1991, because that was the game that pretty much single-handedly put Kirby Puckett in the Hall of Fame. That was the game where he leapt up against the plexiglass and just made that incredible freaking catch to preserve a run, to stop Atlanta from scoring. That was the game where he hit the walk-off home run in the 11th inning. So much happening, so many great plays. That was the game when Puckett said, I'm putting the team on my back. If it was win or go home, and he did that. And I think in TJ was talking about WWE 2K, and I did actually play through that historical mode. And one thing I love the TV package. That's phenomenal. But I also love the in-engine cutscenes. And there are so many dramatic moments in that game. There are moments where there's that Puckett catch that I already mentioned, but there are slides, there are double plays, there are so many incredible moments that stopped both teams from playing, from scoring. It was a complete baseball game, and it had one of the greatest calls in my mind in baseball history when Jack Buck said, "And we'll see you tomorrow night," as Puckett's ball went over the glass. And we went to the next game. So that is definitely the game that I would want to play. And I feel like in this context, it could fit really well because you could set up various situations and little moments like go to the in-engine cutscene, ball's coming up, now your Puckett, go up and get that thing, you know? And you would have multiple chances or whatever. I think it would be really tricky, obviously, to reproduce certain things like hitting that home run. But I think if you give the player a proper assist or give a player an assist, it's not necessarily about raw skill so much as appreciating that narrative moment.
I think, it doesn't have to be about achieving a certain task, but I think just experiencing the moment, right? It shouldn't have to be, you know, hit a home run here. How about it lets you hit a home run?
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. For me, probably the most impactful baseball game I ever watched was in 1986. But it wasn't Game 6 of the National League. Excuse me, it wasn't Game 6 of the World Series. It was Game 6 of the National League Championship Series. The Mets were up 3-2 and were in Houston knowing that in Game 7 they would be facing Mike Scott, who was absolutely unhittable. And in fact, who won the series MVP after the fact, even though he was pitched for the losing team. Game 6 of the NLCS in 1986 was unbelievable on far too many ways to discuss on the show at this point in time. But safe to say, it was incredibly tense. A guy named Bob Nepper, who has been lost to history, basically had the Mets on the ropes. Pitched 8 innings of shutout baseball. The Astros got 3 in the top of the first, and then Bobby Ojeda shut them down for the rest of the way. The Mets had a miracle comeback in the ninth to tie it. It went to, I think, 15 or 16 innings when the Mets finally won it.
you know, they scored three in this, I think it was the 16th. Then Houston scored two, and it was just, it was 7-6. You know, look it up. It's one of, again, the most impactful games. If I had to play one game, and again, I was, they were able to convey the atmosphere and the incredible importance of that game, that would be the game that, I would love to play. So take us out on it, TJ Lowerman. If you had to pick one, since this is your mode, what would that one game be?
Well, I don't want to change history. I just want to keep it exactly the way it was. So I would play game six of the 1995 World Series, where Tom Glavine and Mark Wohlers combined for a one-hitter against the Indians, and David Justice hit a bomb to win it.
And there you go.
So it's pretty amazing. Well done.
All right, so moving on to me. It's my turn now. I've anyone who's listened to me over the last few years has probably heard me talk about this. I'm sure I mentioned it, you know, in passing here on Press Row. But the way that I would love to experience a baseball game, it's already been done in other sports. It's been done, as we talked about, in Fight Night Champion. It's been done to a degree in NBA 2K14 on the PS4 in the My Career mode, where you can basically take a single player and put them in a situation. And I don't mean a single game situation, but put them in a situation where it's not just about what happens on the field, but there's also things going on around them that can influence them and to which they can react. And based upon how they react, they go different ways. What I would love to experience would be a really interesting way to play a historical mode in baseball as an individual player. The one that I would really love the chance to play, and by the way, juxtapose this against the fact that I'm about two games away from finishing my first season in NBA 2K14. I'm like on game 80 of my 82 game first season, right? So I'm, you know, I basically just completed or just about to complete the first season. I would love to play as Roger Maris when he was, I believe it was 1961, chasing Babe Ruth's record as a Yankee with all of the things that were going on around him. If you ever saw the HBO movie 61, a terrific representation of that era. It wasn't just about him hitting home runs, but it was about his relationship with his teammates, his relationship with the press, his relationship with his wife, you know, the fans who didn't want him to get it, all the different things, the anxieties, the difficulties that he had. If you could take the best parts of NBA 2K14, My Career, the best parts of Fight Night Champion, and then you put together some great baseball video game, you know, that we already have with the show, and you immerse it to where what's going on in your life could potentially influence you at the plate. And you don't have to play 162 games, right? You could come up with a way to make it to where, you know, it could be over the course of 5 to 10 hours. Another example is LeBron James mode in the PS3 360 versions of NBA 2K, where you don't play all the games. You just put in different situations with these fantasy teams. There's a whole lot of ingredients that I think from a single player mode, whether it's its own game or whether it's part of a mode, to me, that would be great. There's lots of examples too, right? It doesn't just have to be Roger Maris, but I think that because of the drama of the situation lends itself very well. You know, another one that I've thought of quite often is Oral Hershiser's pitching streak in 1988. Not only what it meant because he literally carried the Dodgers to the pennant, but also the decisions that he made probably blew his arm out. And, you know, making some of the key decisions that he did had a very negative influence on his career moving forward. You could always take situations like something else on a different side of the table, like Ricky Henderson, the year that he set the stolen base records. How would you go, you know, how would you approach that? Or, you know, Hank Aaron, when he was chasing after the, you know, the all-time home run record. You know, I struggle a little bit with going in like the direction of Jackie Robinson because things get so nasty from a historical perspective. But I just think a single-player mode that takes the best of things that we have experienced and injects some of the drama and the history around it would be fantastic. Owen, good. Any chance that would resonate with a large group of people, or am I just sort of dreaming a dream that will never happen?
Potentially. I think what we would probably see more of is Roger Maris going through what he did, you know, in an historically consequential season is something that would resonate with a lot of people. But I don't think, I mean, again, we have to get back to what Kat said at the beginning of this broadcast, which is, you know, what do people really recognize? What do they understand? And frankly, there are, you know, now two generations of kids who not only don't know Roger Maris, they don't even know Mickey Mantle, but I think they do know who Jackie Robinson is. And I think that is a teachable moment, not only about the game of baseball, but also about American history, that could be something that, again, the licensing partners, let's not forget how important their support is to this sort of thing.
Yep.
The licensing partners would get behind. And then also, frankly, the publisher would get behind because it's, you know, it's a public service kind of thing. You know, you can't tell that story enough. It always has, you know, basically a good ending. It is about baseball holding America to a higher standard and, you know, in insisting that it live out its ideals of equality. It still had a long way to go at that point. It still has a long way to go at this point. But, you know, that is an almost universally good moment that people look back on, and it can be told in a number of different ways. And I think it's also something that, you know, as a story of a season or a series of games, you know, can allow you to create a player to sort of participate as a side character in, you know, what was an historically consequential time. So, you know, I do agree with you, you know, that these things do have resonance. But there really are like only one or two moments, and frankly, I can only name one, and that would be Jackie Robinson, you know, that would have the kind of universal appeal that could sell a baseball game, because in the end, as we know, this ain't a charity. They're trying to make money off of this stuff. How can they do that honestly, and how can they do that, you know, credibly? And that would be one of the ways they could.
Submit Sarkar.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the idea of this, you know, kind of universal stories of individual athletes, right? And you can certainly think of, I can't think of anything quite like Jackie Robinson, but you know, there are certainly plenty of interesting, you know, sort of emotional stories you could tell. Thurman Munson, Roberto Clemente, for example.
Oh yeah, absolutely, great examples.
You know, Jim Abbott. You know, guys like that. But I think, you know, when you compare it to something like the LeBron mode in NBA 2K14, where you run into issues, is, you know, what you always do when it comes to sports games is the licensing. And certainly, you know, the NBA 2K series had done it with the Jordan Challenge and the NBA's Greatest stuff. But even then, it took a year, right, for Charles Barkley to come around, or for Scottie Pippen to come around for the Dream Team stuff. And so I think the reason 2K14 with the LeBron mode was able to just be so successful was they were prognosticating and just concocting crazy situations for the next 7 years of the NBA. So they just sort of had, you know, whatever creative license, right? Certainly there are – I think if they were going to do something like that in a game, it would have to be around sort of one person – you know,
right,
rather than, you know, doing a smattering of individuals, because then, you know, you just exponentially increase the licensing headaches involved.
Well, not only that, but I think it would be more impactful, right? It would make sense. Like, if you could build a mode around a thing, like you had the Jordan mode, you've got the LeBron mode, you know, you could build a mode around a single player, a single story. I think it would be much more impactful. Brian Weedy, your thoughts?
It really depends. If you look at the demographics of the game, and it would have appeal, I believe, to kind of the baseball purists, fans that have been around for a long time, you know, an older crowd. And there's definitely a significant portion of who buys the show every year that would fall into that. Now, where it might become more troublesome when you balance development costs and licensing and all that with sales is it going to bring in more sales? Because I think you would have to justify it that way, and it probably would not, because it's not going to draw in casuals, because they don't really have a sense of the history anyway, other than maybe a few movies. And then is it going to bring in a younger crowd? I don't think so, because they'll say, where's our Mike Trout mode? You know, I don't think it would really expand upon, you know, the crowd that would come in for the game. And that would probably make it difficult for them to decide to invest in it.
Chris Sander, help me out here. You got to be with me on this, right?
You know, Rich, I am with you. Only
yes!
Only because no one else is getting your back, you know. I know where to go with this. So, no, but I think that if you built it around such a mode, if you built it around a concept of some type, and that could just be a sort of Hall of Fame mode, a sort of, you know, you could do something where, I mean, even if you did it with just one era of baseball, one season, one historically significant season, right, where several things happen,
right,
you could have several different storylines that you could play with through that time. And then as a bonus, I mean, if you build around one of these older seasons, I mean, it could be any season, really.
The year that both Joe D hit 400 and Ted Williams won the MVP, or vice versa, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you did that and you made a really good effort to try to license as much as possible from that one specific year, you've got the stadiums, you've got the uniforms, you've got the players, you've got the league set up to where if you wanted to just play a season with it, maybe you could. You know, you could do a lot of things off of that. But I think that you would have to, for a marketing standpoint, there's an audience for this sort of thing because they're out there. I mean, they really are. The baseball purists, they would love to have something like this. It enhances your game. I mean, even if the way you justify it even possibly is maybe even offer it as a DLC or something. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you do it. But I would have to really, you know, sit down and really think about the real rational, realistic way to approach it. But if it works in NBA 2K, it does. Baseball is a heck of a lot more dripped in its history. It's so much more dripped in its history. There's so much more of a basis for a historical mode with baseball than any other sport. And if it can work in a sport like NBA 2K, which had a really good era in the 90s, which NBA had a really good era in the 90s, but you're talking in baseball, you're talking multiple eras. And even, I mean, the 90s, that's a problem, I guess, with baseball. The 90s weren't the best time for baseball. So you don't have a bunch of people who are now older who have really amazing fond memories of a golden age of baseball until the late 90s. But then, well, that's stained by steroids. So, you know, you don't have that real golden era that you can go to in recent memory to get the 25 to 35 year old people out there, you know, interested in you. So you have to go back to the 60s and 50s. And, you know, you're talking about stories where you're talking about players where your grandpa talked about them. And that's the big problem that you have with it. But trying to convince an audience that is worthwhile is the challenge.
TJ Lowerman, would you want to step back in history as a single player and experience something like that? And if so, what's a situation you'd like to find yourself in?
Yes, give me 1998 Mark McGwire.
Oh, stop it now. No, a real situation. Come on.
That man went through a lot. Actually, you know what? I'd rather be Sammy Sosa because no one else has had 60 home run seasons and never led the league in home runs.
I got a question for you, TJ.
Sure.
Seriously, this is a legit question. Could we add on a mode where you actually have to try to stick your arm? Like you got to like do a certain button combination to get the steroids in, and then,
yeah,
then
you
get you get a power bonus during that game if you get it right. I think that would just add to the experience.
Yeah, but then you wear the Oculus Rift when the guy's coming in and you aim it for him.
No. You know what they would do with that? You know, like, you know how like movies that are based on true stories, like at the end of the movie they have like a black screen with white text to show like what happens afterwards, or like, you know, like he, 3 years later, he died, or whatever. You know, you could have like a just before and after photos and say, you know, 10 years later, Sammy Sosa, you know, looked like he was afflicted with Michael Jackson's skin condition.
Yeah, but guys, you really didn't like 1998?
No,
that was like my favorite year of baseball ever.
It really was a good year, but then I realized Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but that's in retrospect. When we were living it, when McGwire was hitting those home runs,
that Sports Illustrated cover, man.
TJ, yeah. Everybody, I was in Cooperstown in 1998. I saw the Maguire bat and the Sosa bat come back like relics from the Holy Land. That season was a lie, and I'm as disappointed as anybody else that it turned out to be a lie, but it was crap.
Yep, totally agree.
But when we were there, it was amazing.
Yeah, and looking back,
it was amazing. It was a fantastic time. I held both of those bats in my hands. It's crap. It's all crap.
I have bad news for all of you. All sports are a lie. Yeah. It's all smokes and mirrors. Sorry, guys.
Oh, boy. So on that note, Cap Bailey, since you've already told us that that the good folks at MLB The Show will probably not do what we're talking about, let's take us in a different direction, Cat. What would you like to see?
Wait. I actually think there's a way they could do it.
Oh, let's hear it.
I think they should make it as an expansion pack refresh in September. And so you release, let's say, okay, so you release the game in April, which, I mean, it's the beginning of the season, right? Baseball's a long season. And then by, say, July, only the hardcore are still playing. But you release an expansion pack, bundle it in a special package with the normal game, and then you sell it. And then you make the narrative mode the centerpiece of that expansion pack. That's how I could see it done. And I think that it would be awesome. The problem, of course, is adapting the engine to actually tell a story and do a narrative thing. But that's a whole different can of worms.
That's for sure. All right. So, Kat, you have a different perspective, a different take, something probably a little more practical, perhaps, than my obviously dashed dreams. What's on your mind, Kat?
This is a huge bugbear for me, but it's okay. I've been playing a lot of Titanfall lately. I love Titanfall. That is a great game. It is really kind of at the forefront of multiplayer shooters at the moment. And it makes me realize that online multiplayer and sports games are basically in the Stone Age. They often have terrible stability. They have really bad accessibility. They don't do a good job with matchmaking. They don't have a lot of options. And the only reason you play is purely for the sake of I just want to keep playing. Yeah. Yes, there are ranks in Madden and a lot of other things, but it's all really underdeveloped. So I would take MLB The Show's online mode and completely overhaul it. And I wrote down some ideas. Okay, so bear with me here. First thing, you got to put right on the front screen, play now online. I'm going to play a button, press a button, boom, I'm in the game. I need to be able to play an online game immediately. That's the problem with sports games. They bury this stuff in menus, so many menus. It's really bad. It needs to be instantaneous. Second thing, I think I would want definitely a lot more customization. So I'm talking about the ability to play with a fantasy draft roster. I'm talking about having a game day mode where, this is kind of my idea, right? So right now we have the show live where you can play a game with that day's pitcher. Well, why can't I play it online? Why can't I click a game and it automatically matches me up with somebody who is playing the other team? So now I'm like, I click the team, I'm the Twins, and some Joe Schmo in Detroit is playing as the Tigers, and we get to play against each other. And I think that would be pretty fun. I think we need a lot more unlockables in online mode. So you play the games, you keep moving up the ranks, you get your unlockable uniforms, your classic stadiums, classic teams like the Expos and the Senators, celebrations. I think a key example of a game that does that really well is FIFA, where you have your EA Sports football club and you steadily accrue points and then you can unlock all of this different stuff. It gives you a sense of accomplishment. And I'm shocked that this isn't seen more in sports games. These games need more of a tale, and unlockables seem like the most obvious thing in the world here. Another thing that I would like, not perks necessarily, because I think it would throw off the balance, but one of the biggest problems that we see in online sports games is that teams are unbalanced. For example, when I play Madden, I guarantee that if I hit play now, right at this moment, I would draw somebody who's playing as the Seahawks.
Cheaters, all of them.
And if I'm not drawing somebody who's playing as the Seahawks or playing as the Niners, because those are cheap teams. well, I want to play as my favorite team. I want to play as the Twins. Well, the Twins suck. They have terrible pitching, and I'd be an idiot to play them online. But what if I play as – but what if, as I play the game, I unlock players? I get to be able to customize my roster. I get to add people. I get to level up my team. I get Harmon to build Killebrew. Upon it. I start to get – so I have some say over the roster. And if you can – do it in a way where I have meaningful choices on my roster development without making it so that it's all like perfect overall people, like having me having to manage a budget or something. That could be a really cool meta game online. Not a full season mode, not a full online GM mode, but oh, give me some control over my roster, like real meaningful control. And finally, individual challenges. Give me challenges like have a player hit 3 home runs in a game, get a no-hitter on an online game, on and on and on. And that's how you earn points to unlock things. There's so many things that can be done in sports games online, and it's just not done. And I feel like online modes are the lifeblood of a good sports game, because that's what keeps you playing after you're finished with, long after you've gotten bored playing against the computer. And to be perfectly honest, they're underdeveloped, except in FIFA. And FIFA does a lot, has a lot of terrific ideas, from the EA Sports catalog to connected seasons, which I am shocked is not in every single game. For reference, in FIFA, you play a game. If you win, you get 3 points. And you move up the ranks, and if you win enough games, you win a championship in that rank. I would love to see that in MLB. Give it a baseball context. If I get enough points in that rank, then I win the World Series. Whatever. I'm awesome.
Brian Weida, you know a little something about winning championships in FIFA seasons. I know you also have some thoughts on online playing sports games.
Yep.
So talk to us.
Well, I think Kat makes a lot of great points related to online, and it's kind of an area that developers have neglected for years now. But something that came to my mind that's timely, considering the focus on it lately and the discussions around it, and is an online mode that would just be extra innings. Now, this is similar to what I thought worked extremely well with NCAA football a handful of years back when they had an overtime mode.
That's a great idea.
Essentially, when you play an online game, and when we're talking about a baseball game, you're probably going to invest close to an hour, okay? The only way you can speed that up is by stripping out the presentation. Besides that, you know, things like quick count and everything that they're introducing this year takes away from the integrity of those games. You're not going to play against someone and just get luck of the draw, bad counts at the plate to save time. You're not going to do that. You don't want that. So what you need is kind of a mode that drops you in, and it limits the negative experiences you can have. Because if it's laggy or you're playing against somebody who's annoying, you're only going to be playing for 5 minutes. But potentially that could be a really exciting event too, because you go into the extra innings and you're one pitch away from essentially losing or winning, and it keeps things intense the whole time. You don't have to invest an hour before you reach those moments or extra innings in a full game. So that would be my idea, is to drop you in and you're just playing extra innings. And then, you know, if you lose, oh, well, you bounce back.
Yeah.
You only wasted 5 minutes. You bounce back and you play another.
It's kind of like sort of the ultimate team mode in Madden or NCAA, where the games are shorter, but it's almost better, because it's like in baseball, in the ultimate team games, if somebody scores kind of quickly, or, you know, gets a turnover and then scores, people quit.
Well,
in baseball,
think about
you give up a run or two, you still have a chance to score a run or two at the bottom of the inning.
Yeah, exactly. In an extra innings. Now, if you go in and play an online game right now of the show, and you hit a grand slam in the first inning, they're quitting on you.
that's right. Exactly.
So, I mean, that's always been a problem, and they've actually had it so you can quit in the first inning and you don't get a loss or whatever, and because of lag issues or whatever, if people want to back out. But then, in my experience, I had to keep myself from scoring early in games in order not to get disconnected on. But I like the extra innings idea because, again, it's completely intense the whole time. You're not going to have any downtime in that. Every pitch is important. Plus, you're not going to be facing – now, the show did some good stuff last year with forcing people to use rotations in online games. But you're not going to be facing starters. They just stick you in there with a bullpen. And then, you know, max out your closers, or they make fatigue matter more for closers. And then if you go through one inning in the extra innings game, you'll want to pull the closer, or, you know, maybe they can go two innings tops, but you're not going to end up with these dominant pitchers throughout the whole thing, which is also another thing that frustrates people. Not just the difficulty of hitting online because of lag and the difficulty in picking up pitches online because of loss of frames and everything, but because you're generally facing top-notch pitchers. And so you actually get, you know, some of these setup men who aren't as good, and you can take advantage of them. I think it'd be fun.
Well, you know, something else, I'll even take it to another level, right? I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but we, those of us who are in our Press Row Madden League, are having a blast playing in our league because we're playing with a bunch of people that we know, and we're having a good time. And like so many of the games come down to the last minute or whatever. You know, we had a great time in our Press Row NCAA league for the same reasons. I think if you take the combination of having a good bunch of people to play with and sort of a extra innings mode, I mean, it would be a lot of fun without a dramatic investment of time to even be able to set up like tournaments or leagues with your friends in this sort of mode, where you know that you're not going to have to invest an hour in a game. And it, you know, it's a different way to play a baseball game, but those kinds of things. So if you take your extra innings mode and you combine it with 5 or 10 of your friends into a league, like you could really come up with some really interesting ways to build a community in a baseball game without it being a disaster. And TJ Lowerman, you have tried to set up leagues in MLB The Show for about the last 18 or 19 years, and I don't think any of them have been successful. I mean, any of this resonate with you?
Yes, online play was hugely popular when I was 8 years old and tried to do it. But yeah, if that's the main thing right now with online play, is those games just take way too long. So anything to make them quicker. But the only problem is if you're going to make them just extra innings, you're probably never going to use your starting pitcher. You're only going to use your closers. And then the problem with baseball is it's meant to be a long, drawn-out game, and you have specialists that come in to face just one batter.
Right.
And cutting it down that short kind of loses, like, the essence of the game.
Good point. Good point. Chris Sander, your thoughts?
I think I'm going to mirror what TJ said as far as baseball is meant to be a long, drawn-out, strategic chess kind of game. So it's really hard to bring that onto an online experience and not expect people to like invest just a ton of time. But at the same time, because I'm really talking about time, I'm saying time as many times as possible, apparently, in a 5-minute period. But you need something that is accessible. This is with all sports games. This isn't just baseball either, where I mean, you're dealing with the Call of Duty, Titanfall kind of problem where you can jump in a game and get out in 10 minutes. You need that with sports games somehow. And I think that for some people, having an extra innings mode would be enough for online. And I think if you built something around it, like in Call of Duty, where you do level up, you know, that sort of approach where you level up, you build up a profile of some kind, that would work in a sense. But I don't know. The problem is, how do you reward it? I mean, how do you make that work to where there's a clear, I guess, a clear reason to, or I guess, a clear way to give out the points and whatnot? It's just, it's a mess as far as trying to figure it out for sports games. But man alive, there needs to be something that's quicker, for especially for baseball. Of course, with baseball period, you just need an online mode that works with no lag to start off everything. And then from there, you need just some kind of something to be able to get in and out. And it may just be, I don't even know what that looks like, honestly. I'm not the biggest online guy, but it has to be more accessible to guys who don't have an hour every night to invest in the game, in that sort of sense.
TJ.
Yeah, and talking about building up your team, that's something that MLB has done the last couple of years in their Diamond Dynasty mode, where you can't really update the actual players in the game, but they have these dynasty players, which are just like fake random generated guys. And as you win and earn more money in the game, you can go and spend that on upgrading your B+ left fielder, John Johnson. And so you can build a team through that. But at some point, those players are going to leave you and you're not going to keep them forever.
Kat Bailey, close us out.
I think that there just needs to be a way to give a longer life to the standard random matchmaking mode, because there's been a lot of focus on building communities and having leagues and that sort of thing. And that's all well and good. But there are times when I want to just sit down and hit play now and play against someone. And while that's fine for now, I think that that idea could be developed considerably. And looking around at other online games such as Titanfall, you see a definite reward system for doing well, for even playing for a long time. And I think that is a place where sports games are definitely missing the boat. And I would love to see NHL and Madden and MLB and FIFA to an even greater extent go out and really rethink how they approach it, because I think that is an area where they can make real meaningful improvements right now.
You know, it's not easy to build sports games. It's even more difficult when you have to release a game every single year by contractual obligation. So we completely get why the guys who make these games do what they do. And that's why I think it's so impressive when they are able to come up with new cool things like, you know, the Fight Night Champion stories, or, you know, the LeBron James mode, or the new My Career mode in NBA 2K, and improvements to Road to the Show and all the different things that they do. So at the end of the day, we get it. But that doesn't mean that the world is not ready for new and exciting and different ways to experience sports. One of the key elements that we love about sports is the human element. And there's far too little of that. And there's also far too little of history. And if you can combine the human element and the history of baseball, I have a feeling that it would resonate a lot more than I think some people give it credit for. But we also understand it's a business, and there are all sorts of technology and licensing and other sorts of roadblocks that get in the way. But I certainly hope that as this new generation dawns relatively soon with baseball and, frankly, in all other sports games, that we continue to see some innovations in the people who make these games pushing the bounds, because I think we all would agree that there's a lot of room for new ways to play these games. So on behalf of Brian Weedye from Pasta Padre, Kat Bailey from US Gamer and other places, Chris Shanner from Operation Sports, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, Owen Good from Polygon, TJ Larman from That Sports Gamer, I am Rich Grisham. Thank you so much for listening, and a big thanks to all the panelists for their great stuff. It's not easy to come up with stuff like this. I'm Rich Grisham. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Enjoy March Madness. Have a great week, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio. Look for it on your favorite podcast app. Follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast. Or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate and review it and comment it on it while you're there, too. That helps us keep the show going. And make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follow: Operation Sports, Chris Sanner at Chris_SNR. Kotaku's Owen Good at Owen Good. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS. Pasta Padre's Brian Weedye at Pasta Padre. And me, your host, Richard Grisham at Rich Grisham. And of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. As always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every time we can. And we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports or you, our listeners. Thanks. We'll see you again really soon.
It could be neat though, is like a like you know they have the tech demos of like you can just fly through a world in Oculus Rift, you know, just explore from a first person perspective. Like imagine you could do that with Ebbets Field.
Oh, if you could go, you know? I kind of wonder like if you could watch. And you know a baseball game as it was played in 1952 at Ebbets Field.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Sepia tones.
Just like you know, sitting in you know whatever section 100
or manage the game, right? Like you know, but, you
yeah, sure, you can manage the game. I mean, you know, you talk about sepia tones. People didn't see in sepia tone in 1952. Right. I'm pretty sure.
They did. I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure that worked.
The world didn't stop being black and white until 1973.
Great technological leaps in eyeglass innovation since
whatever the first year of the Brady Bunch. That's when the world was in color for the first time.
My God.
Hey, now you guys joke about this, but people actually used to dream in black and white. I'm dead serious. They really did. Like when black and white TV was the big thing, they actually dreamed in black and white. That's actually you can look that up. That's actually a fun fact.
No way, really? So,
thank you.
I need to ask my dad about that.
I think you just
did you dream in black and white when you were a kid?
I dreamed in black and white as a kid.
Between the Mets jokes and the AIDS jokes, I'm really not happy.
And you know what? Before 1920, they dreamed in radio.
By 2015, I should be able to be Jackie Robinson in the Oculus Rift, and I should be able to feel the baseball when it hits me, and I should be able to feel Pee Wee Reese when he puts his arm around me. No.
Rich, wait a second.
One-to-one haptic field feedback.
Exactly.
Pee Wee Reese puts his arm around
me. No, you should get on the what's that, the thing with the, like the treadmill that, you know, you can play a shooter on. That, you
yeah,
know,
the
you,
Omni Directional.
The Omni,
that every
right?
Day.
You know,
Rich already has a treadmill.
I do that every day.
I've actually seen that
thing. There you go. You use that thing, and you slide into home. You steal home.